Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. On March 8th, an FBI agent walked into a classroom at the University of Texas Law School. The class was on U.S. law and national security, so his presence was not questioned. However, when he showed the students a list of groups on the U.S. government's terror watch list, some of the students began to lean forward in their seats and pay closer attention. They recognized the names. Indie Media and Food Not Bombs were groups their friends had been active with.
Are they so paranoid that they're willing to infiltrate or surveil these groups? I mean, what kind of resources do they dedicate toward dealing with groups that are on their terrorist watch list?
We hear from national security writer Nick Schwellenbach, whose March 27 story in Alternate about this incident is titled Keeping Tabs on the Peaceniks. We speak first with University of Texas Law School student Elizabeth Wagner, who was present at her law school class when the FBI agent walked in. I asked her to explain what happened.
I'm a student in a class called U.S. Law and National Security, and my professor invited a friend of his from the FBI office in Austin to come speak to us about terrorism in Texas. So I was present in the class when the officer gave his presentation and listed certain groups on a watch list.
This was Agent G. Charles Rassner who came to speak to the class. Tell us what happened next.
So he gave a presentation on terrorism in Texas, and that presentation was labeled unclassified on the first slide, and this was all on PowerPoint. There were several slides in the presentation, and the first one listed three general categories of organizations that the FBI looks at, and again, this is all about terrorism. That was the title of the presentation, and it said international terrorist groups, domestic terrorist groups, and cause groups. And when asked what a cause group was, he sort of referenced anti-war, you know, that kind of thing, or environmental activist kind of groups. You know, what he meant by cause groups was what you imagine it might mean, you know, just groups that have a cause, whatever that is, political cause. So then the next slide was a map of Texas, and then on the side there was a key, and for different kinds of groups, there would be a dot on the map. And so white supremacist groups had a red dot, and anarchists had a yellow dot. And so then he had a dot, did these different color dots all over the map to indicate where this kind of activity was happening in the state. And then Austin, which is where I live, had, you know, anarchists, white supremacists. I think it had all four dots, and I don't remember what all four were. A third one was international terrorism, I think. I don't remember what the fourth one was. And then finally, right as class was ending, he puts up the slide, the watch list. And on that list were Indie Media and Food Not Bombs. And then as friends and I have discussed it, we determined that Rainforest Action Network was on the list. The Texas Communist Party, they said, was on the list. I have friends that remember more than I did, but, you know, I saw Indie Media and Food Not Bombs and was shocked because I have friends that work in those organizations that, I mean, to have those organizations' names listed anywhere in a presentation on terrorism is shocking.
Now, Indie Media, let's just point out, it's an independent news media. It's kind of a news media collective, people being the media, right?
That's right. Be the media is their slogan.
And so about Food Not Bombs, they give out food, right?
That's right. Their overriding philosophy, as I understand it, is that our money should be going towards feeding the people and not, you know, bombing countries. You know, so certainly that's a political message, but their activity is feeding the homeless or feeding whoever wants to be fed, you know, with food that's been donated or collected somehow.
We're going to be speaking with Nick Schwellenbach. In his Alternate story, he writes that Food Not Bombs distributes unused vegetarian food from grocery stores. So I wonder if that caught any special attention. They're vegetarian.
Who knows? I mean, that would be pretty amazing if so. I mean, they definitely have an anti-consumption message, you know, this idea of using food that others don't want and that kind of thing, which goes against, you know, certain people's visions of consumption and that being good for America and that kind of thing. So,
now, we can make light of this, but I understand that you found it somewhat unsettling, and this is not something that is typically in your field of interest, right?
That's right. I mean, I just do labor and poverty law. That's what I'm mostly interested in, but it was shocking that the FBI would be involved and would be looking at these groups. I mean, and then they would tell us about it, you know, that it was just so open. Well, yes, we look at these peace groups. I mean, it was disturbing. And these are people that I'm friends with. This is me, you know. I mean, anybody can be in any media.
So this is a little close to home.
Yeah.
And I understand that you filed a FOIA, a Freedom of Information Act request?
That's right. After the presentation, I asked the officer if I could have a copy of the presentation, and he refused. And he said that he had a proprietary government interest in the presentation. And I said, well, but government property belongs to the people when it's unclassified. And he said, well, no, I have a proprietary interest. I'm not going to give it to you. And but he did give me his card, and so from that, I filed a FOIA request. And since then, the ACLU also is working on filing FOIA requests and getting the groups together who were listed in the presentation to file a FOIA request jointly.
Now, what was the climate in the class, and what kind of an atmosphere prevailed during this presentation? Were other students concerned about what was happening?
There were other students that were concerned, and I should add from a variety of political stripes, but this being a law school, you know, the nature of, I mean, I feel that most people in there just don't want to rock the boat, don't want to say anything, just kind of want to get home to their kids, you know. So, I mean, most people were not saying anything and probably weren't even worried about it that much, you know, but I mean, I think those of us who, you know, for me, it was because I knew people in those groups, and I think for others, you know, it may have been some of the same thing, or just a, you know, general concern for civil liberties. But I mean, overall, there was a surprising lack of shock. I mean, there's a lot of conservatives in this law school, so maybe that's why.
And do you think that in a way we've been prepared for this ever since the day that George Bush announced "You're with us or against us" and sort of started focusing on, you know, threats that would be posed and how the war on terror superseded all other agendas?
Well, I guess agencies know now that if they say that something's terrorism, then they can work on it. And so everything's terrorism. You know, a group that's against the administration is terrorism. And that doesn't really make sense to me. I don't think that would really make sense to anybody. But, you know, I guess the way it was communism in the 50s, terrorism now, even for groups that have nothing to do with that. And it's ridiculous, and I wonder, you suggest that it's calculated, and I think that there's some of that, but I don't know, I wonder if it's incompetence, too. I mean, it's just so stupid to be spending time on groups like this when there are, you know, more obvious dangers, and that can be debated as well, but certainly this is the wrong focus.
What do you think that this kind of an experience might do to someone like yourself? How will it impact you?
I don't know if it'll impact me as much as it impacts, for instance, the kids who do Food Not Bombs in Houston. Many are high schoolers. Their parents are concerned about them being involved with Food Not Bombs in light of this. And of course, there's no reason for concern. None. Food Not Bombs is a peace group who serves food. But that affects these kids whose parents are worried about the FBI surveillance. I just heard a presentation. You know, I mean, in my political work later on, I mean, certainly as an anti-war activist or something, I mean, I could see envision being targeted or being put on the no-fly list for having talked about this or something, but it's certainly not going to stop me from doing anything or talking about it.
There's an LA Times story about this, and then the other by Nick in Alternet. What do you make of the coverage? Do you feel that it has accurately reported what happened?
Yes, I do. And they've luckily been able to talk to a number of law students in the class to corroborate the story because the FBI spin has already started. But I think it's important that this story be looked at not just in isolation, but as part of what's going on nationally with FBI surveillance all over the country, because this isn't just in Austin. This is in Philadelphia, this is in Denver, this is in San Francisco. And so I think it's great that journalists are making that connection between this surprise revelation at a law school in Austin and actual FBI activity that's going on everywhere.
We've just seen that the Patriot Act was extended and is official. At what level are you aware, though, of the implications where the president's NSA domestic spy program is concerned?
I guess in conversations that I've had with the ACLU, we've talked about that and they're similar issues. And I guess that was everyone's underlying concern with the NSA program all along, was that they were not just listening to supposed al-Qaeda terrorists, but also listening to average Americans, and this provides more ammunition for that. that concern that they are in fact listening to anti-war groups or people with leftist political views and not people with any sort of violent motive.
And as a law student, would you say that you understand the reasons why the laws were enacted to protect the civil rights of innocent people who might be dragged into things like this without any real reason?
I mean, I'm no expert on civil liberties, civil rights law. You know, I guess more as a citizen, it's just my instinct that this kind of thing is not what free speech is about. The First Amendment was passed to protect this. And we all know that. We all grow up knowing that. And so to have to worry about being watched or listened to for your political views is shocking, is outrageous.
Elizabeth Wagner is a law student at the University of Texas in Austin. She's been in touch with the ACLU of Texas and has also filed a Freedom of Information Act request to try to obtain a copy of the PowerPoint report the FBI showed to her class on March 8th. Our next guest is Nick Schwellenbach, a writer focusing on national security and a former University of Texas student who is now an investigator at the Washington, D.C.-based Project on Government Oversight, POGO.org. That group is not officially involved with Schwellenbach's private research and writing on what happened at Elizabeth Wagner's law school class. In his alternate story, he points out that this is not the first time there have been reports of federal surveillance of political organizations at UT Austin. He and others are now trying to understand the implications.
I've studied a little bit about what happened in the 1960s and 70s with activists being infiltrated by the FBI. Activists in the Native American movement, in the civil rights movement, and student protesters of the Vietnam War. And I was also aware of congressional investigations into what happened, namely the Church Committee, and even skeptical senators and members of Congress came around to the conclusion that what our government was doing was having a chilling effect on our civil liberties, namely freedom of speech and assembly. And, you know, how can you have a government that suppresses civil liberties in the name of them? I mean, it's a contradictory position that the government was in, and now obviously has negative effects on democracy itself.
Now, were you at all surprised at some of the groups that were mentioned by this FBI supervisory senior resident agent, G. Charles Rasner?
I was actually somewhat shocked that he said these things publicly. And in at least one press account where the reporter actually got a hold of Rasner, he admitted that he actually didn't know what two of the groups, I believe it was Food Not Bombs and the Media, what they actually stood for and what they did. And so I found it hard to believe that he would say these things publicly and then turn around and say, well, I didn't even know why I said this. It doesn't make sense. And it begs the question, what kind of oversight and quality control, how do they decide which groups are on the terror watch list? You know, can this be easily manipulated by people seeking to suppress political dissidents? I think that's a great question, and the FBI needs to answer.
Now, how could someone possibly believe that a group calling itself Food, Not Bombs, would be a dangerous terrorist organization or have any ties to any because of the name itself, right?
One Washington Post writer, his name's Bill Arkin, he actually has a very good critique of this. Arkin believes that there's this kind of connecting the dots mentality. And since 9/11, you know, you hear this, you know, from government commissions, intelligence agents, they want to connect the dots. Now, that could be anything from, oh, this person is laundering money and they're involved with Al-Qaeda. Now, if we can connect the dots between that person and people they're financially connected to, perhaps we can, you know, figure out terror financial networks. Now, this kind of thinking can obviously be abused. They'll say, well, someone in Food Not Bombs might be connected to some anarchist organization that smashed windows at Starbucks during the Seattle protests. And while that may be true, can you equate smashing windows at Starbucks with blowing up innocent civilians? I don't think you can, and I don't think you should. And so you need to distinguish between these two things. And I think with this data mining, dot connecting mentality is you don't learn to distinguish what is legitimate political protest and what is illegitimate. You lose all sense of barriers and differences are kind of washed away. It's kind of diabolical because at some point, anyone can be a terrorist. And so the term itself loses its meaning.
Anyone can be a terrorist, meaning in the sense of how we're all 6 degrees of separation
exactly.
away?
We also, at a certain level, you could indict anyone. It really is dangerous because anyone can then suddenly be held in suspicion if they're at all connected to something that's outside the mainstream, or if they do something even a little abnormal, then suddenly they can fall under investigation by the FBI. And, you know, it doesn't really help fight what are really terrorist activities, because then, you know, your law enforcement is spread thin. They're following dead leads, chasing down grandmas and activists who are trying to give food to homeless people.
Now, let's go through your story here. You start out by talking about this agent, G. Charles Rasner, who mm-hmm. delivered a guest lecture before Professor Ronald Sievert's U.S. Law and National Security class of approximately 100 students.
Mm-hmm.
Now, take us to the University of Texas Law School here. What's your best guess as to what Agent Rasner was doing here?
Counterterrorism efforts in Texas. That was the name of his presentation. And, you know, of course the FBI wants to reach out to law students. It's kind of cliche, but they're the leaders of tomorrow. And they also may go to work for the FBI. And so it's a potential recruiting ground and a place just to get the word out and communicate with the public, which isn't necessarily a bad thing for the FBI to do. But I think in this case it kind of backfired because of all the media attention his presentation has garnered.
You write that a list of approximately 10 groups, Food Not Bombs, was listed 7th. Indie Media was listed 10th, with a reference specifically to Indie Conference 2005. The Communist Party of Texas made the list, and Rasner explained that these groups could have links to terrorist activity and noted that peaceful-sounding group names could cover more violent extremist tactics. Where you were looking at the groups involved, what kinds of things came to mind as to what these groups could be facing under this new climate where someone like Agent Rasner would just sort of casually mention their names like that?
There's no explanation of what these groups do. So if you don't know who these groups are and say you're, you know, just an average law student, suddenly when you see Food Not Bombs, maybe a flyer or something like, I mean, what do you think when you hear Food Not Bombs? You just associate them with terrorists because you know nothing else. Actually, I'm more interested in what's going on inside the FBI and inside law enforcement. Are they so paranoid that they're willing to infiltrate or surveil these groups? I mean, what kind of resources do they dedicate toward dealing with groups that are on their terrorist watch lists? You know, I spoke with an FBI San Antonio press person where Rasner is based out of, and he said, well, you know, just because you're on this watch list doesn't necessarily mean we're going to detain you or throw you in jail. We may just want to question you. But, you know, I wonder what else do they do? Do they surveil them? Is there an extreme culture of paranoia within the FBI? And how do they interact with the public if they have such attitudes?
We have to think about what could happen when a group like Indie Media winds up on a terror watch list, because if that group is then investigated by federal agencies or Homeland Security with that label already affixed to it, then all kinds of things can be colored in such a way that behavior can be misread, misunderstood, right?
Yeah, and I think the steps it takes for law enforcement to go over the line have been reduced. You know, I could see this is definitely possible when you're already classified or connected with terrorism, in the case of Indie Media, wrongly. You know, say there's a controversial story on Indie Media, then the number of steps it'll take for the FBI to, say, shut down their servers has probably been cut down from half a dozen steps to a couple. And so the willingness of law enforcement to violate civil liberties of an organization like Food Not Bombs or Indie Media or the people involved with those organizations has been reduced. So people take for granted that one of the fundamental documents that creates our government and lays out a social contract between the people and the government is the Bill of Rights. And the Bill of Rights is to protect the people, to insulate the people from the government actually violating their rights. And so what you see is the government's lowering the threshold by which it views these groups and individuals within our society and is more willing, perhaps, to violate their rights.
Let's talk about UT Watch, good government group, a group monitoring policy.
Yeah, it was a group I was involved with when I was a student at the University of Texas. We were just a university watchdog group. We wanted our university to be held accountable. We wanted affordable tuition, and we wanted the university to be accessible to students, you know, regardless of income across the state of Texas. And we were also critical of corporate influence within the university.
But in the story that you've written here that's in Alternet, you point out that an FBI agent questioned a student and asked that student if he had ever been involved with UT Watch. Talk about the circumstances of what happened.
Well, among a variety of things that we did, we discovered that our campus police were involved with the Austin Joint Terrorism Task Force. Now, Joint Terrorism Task Force are located in a variety of cities across the United States. They're a way to coordinate activities of law enforcement from, you know, the local city law enforcement with the FBI and other law enforcement organizations, you know, on the local, state, and federal level. And so we discovered that our own campus police were part of the Austin JTTF. And we discovered that through a Freedom of Information Act request. Another activity that we were involved with is we discovered that our campus police also had semi-automatic weapons and shotguns on campus. And, you know, we made both of these things public. So presumably that was how the Austin FBI actually knew about the existence of UT Watch and knew to ask about our organization. But there also is the possibility that the University of Texas, you know, informed the FBI. Now, the number one unanswered question with this case is how did the FBI know that this student, who is not involved with UT Watch, actually made this request in the first place? The request was a state open records request to the University of Texas. And how did the FBI get a hold of that request? Obviously, someone at UT gave the FBI this request and said, hey, this is suspicious, you know, you should check into this. And maybe at the same time they said, hey, you might want to see if this kid's connected to this group.
Do you think that this investigative process that wound up compiling lists of these groups that are known to be anti-war, known to be trying to document wrongdoing on the part of the Bush administration, is this more evidence that this is a political campaign to repress dissent and to protect the White House from the kind of criticism that these groups have to offer?
It can be read that way. I'm really unsure, you know, if this is being coordinated from the top down or if this is also just a culture of paranoia at the FBI. I'm sure you're aware of this program is called COINTELPRO during the 60s and 70s. Now, that was literally a coordinated campaign to suppress political dissidents. I really don't know if there's a coordinated campaign. I think the program of COINTELPRO has just become the culture of the FBI. You know, like I said, we need to know more, but that in some ways can be even more diabolical. It's ingrained in these people's minds, I think, but yeah, I mean, we do need to see what's going on from the top down. I mean, what kind of orders are agents in their local field offices receiving? You know, those are questions that need to be answered, and I really don't know the answer. But this is happening nationally, and I think that's clear.
Nick, who spoke with Renee Salinas, the spokesperson for the FBI San Antonio field office?
I actually spoke with him.
Why did Renee Salinas tell you that the FBI doesn't put people on the terror watch list for grins?
Well, I asked Salinas, how does one get on the terror watch list? And he wouldn't go into details. He simply said, we don't put it on the list for grins. You know, he says, you know, we don't do it lightly, but didn't give me many more details than that. He referred me to the National FBI office, but I haven't had a chance to call them yet. That would be an entity that you'd want to get in contact with if you or anyone else interested in this would like to probe farther.
He said that a group has to act or participate in a group connected with terrorism. What comes to mind when when you think about that, I mean, suppose a person were to log on and, as search engines are notoriously weird, come up with a search or, you know, a website that was never intended to be looked for, but it had to do with something that the FBI or other agencies were watching. Does that constitute acting or connecting to terrorism?
I don't think it significantly says anything. And, you know, that's a great question. You know, same kind of question. If you look up a book on Osama bin Laden or the Taliban, does that connect you with terrorism? I don't think that's enough information to say anything. You know, the only thing you may be able to say from that is someone's interested in Al-Qaeda or Osama bin Laden. But on its own, that's, in my opinion, not worth looking into any farther. And, you know, with these Patriot Act provisions, the FBI can look up your library search records. And what are they doing with that? And these are the kind of questions I have. What are the standards for putting someone on a terror watch list? How does one arrive on it? And what he said was very vague.
He also mentioned the fact that the terror watch list helps keep different law enforcement agencies informed about suspect characters. Is that the word he used?
I don't believe he used suspect characters, but, you know, he meant that, though, like characters we may want to ask questions of. He didn't say that if you were in Food Not Bombs, you were a terrorist, but he did say that members in those organizations may be connected to something. We may want to ask them questions. He wouldn't elaborate any further.
Do we get the sense that there is a sophisticated aspect to the individuals and groups they're choosing to look at? Or do we monitor everyone who emails abroad? Do we monitor everyone who's in touch with their sister organizations in England about the peace march that's going to take place next month, that kind of thing?
Well, I think they're doing both. I don't think there are any boundaries. I think they've all been broken down in this connect-the-dots mentality that the FBI and other law enforcement agencies have. And, you know, you see with the National Security Agency, which is supposed to be a foreign-directed government agency, so all the barriers are breaking down. The wall between domestic and foreign is being broken down, and also any kind of walls between what's a legitimate political activity and what could be considered terrorism, they're being broken down. And so everything's being scooped up in this kind of vacuum cleaner approach that's unhealthy for democracy, and it may have a chilling effect on people's willingness to speak up.
Or organize and get active.
Or do anything, or even speak on the phone to someone about what they believe in. I mean, something as innocuous as that. But I don't think it's any surprise that they do target groups like Indie Media. I mean, groups like Indie Media are central to political organizing. And people in Indie Media, you know, they'll tell you that they're politically active. They don't feign objectivity. So those people get pegged and connected to activist organizations, too. So if you have someone who's connected to an anti-war organization, of course, then at least some of those people are going to be traced back to Indie Media. Then everyone in Indie Media is going to get a black mark and put on some terror watch list. That's if they are doing this vacuum cleaner approach, which, you know, it looks like they may be doing. And it's very dangerous.
Nick Schwellenbach is currently an investigator at the Washington, D.C.-based Project on Government Oversight, POGO.org, a watchdog group that promotes open and accountable government. He's a former member of University of Texas Watch, UTWatch.org, a student-based watchdog organization. Schwellenbach is also a freelance writer focusing on national security. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. Talk Nation Radio is produced at WHUS, Radio for the People at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. WHUS.org to listen live, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. TalkNation.org or TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts and discussion.